everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom on the other side of the glass, engineering and producing our show. I guess, Tom, we've got that wind. I don't like that kind of strong, dusty wind. I don't think many people that live in Tucson do like it, but I guess we're going to have to put up with it for a couple of fronts that are moving
through.
And there
is an air quality advisory out this afternoon as well for particulate matter.
Yeah, that does not surprise me. All right, the Buckmaster Show in the Green Thing, Zocalo Village Studio. Today is Friday. It's the 4th of March, 2022. Our radio station is 1030 KVOI, the voice trusted source for news talk. This week, this year, actually, we're marking the 12th year into our radio project, 34 years, beginning of 34 years of TV and radio here in Tucson. Our worldwide live listening and podcast of the show on my website, buckmastershow.com. Our live line is presented courtesy of Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Friday, we like to do a big media shout out. Some of our media partners, TucsonSentinel.com, Green Valley News, and Saharita Sun, the Tucson Local Media Group and their portfolio of publications. That includes Tucson Inside Tucson Business, Tucson Weekly, Oro Valley Explorer, Marana News, Foothills News, and Desert Times. Our Friday Focus interview today, the Tucson Fire Chief is with us, Chuck Ryan. Chief Ryan, how are you?
Doing well, Bill. Good to be back.
Always good to have you back in studio. And joining me in studio, our guest reporter of the week, Eddie Celaya, is here of the Arizona Daily Star. Eddie covers breaking news for the Star, and he also is on covers issues related to the legalization of marijuana in Arizona. And there are a lot of issues that are associated with that. Eddie, it's always good to see you.
Bill, great to be back.
Thank you very much, Chief Ryan. Let's get an update now on the efforts. Like the police department, the fire service here in town is looking for qualified individuals. What is your situation? Almost say man. I don't want to say manpower, but the situation with your men and women personnel.
Sure. A couple of things. Really excited. We've been able to increase our allotted headcount from 632 commissioned firefighters to 645, thanks to a federal grant for staffing, which the city manager and mayor and council approved us to apply for, and we received last year. So that's really awesome, because that grant will fund 13 additional firefighter salaries for 3 years for the city of Tucson. So right now we have an academy class in. I think they're in week 7 or 8. They'll graduate mid-June. We started with 40. There's a natural attrition with these. So we're down to 32, but we're pretty confident these 32 remaining will graduate mid-June. And we'll start another recruit academy with 40 to 45 members in July, right after the start of the fiscal year.
So did I hear you right? That would be 645 men and women in the fire service in Tucson.
That's correct.
How does that shape up for a city of, 700,000 people? Where do we rank? Is that about what you'd like, or would you want more?
I would want more, and I've expressed that, and certainly the city manager is well aware. Mm-hmm. You know, comparable cities to Tucson in terms of both demographic, size, service delivery model, El Paso, Albuquerque, Omaha, Nebraska, Sacramento. Those are our major comparator cities. And by and large, they have a firefighting force around 700 to 710. I'd certainly love to see Tucson get to that size. The Tucson Fire Department was there at one point in time prior to the recession, and then economic pressures obviously influence things, but my goal would be to grow the department more. Our men and women work really, really hard every day, and we're right at 100,000 calls for service, just below that 100,000 mark last year, and so we do need some more folks, and as resources allow, the city manager is working with us to be able to increase the workforce.
Here's Eddie Celaya of the Star.
Chief, I obviously cover the breaking news kind of general assignment beat, and there's been a noticeable market increase in vehicle collisions lately, especially those involving pedestrians. Number one, just what is the approach when Tucson Fire responds to these sort of calls? Mm-hmm. And number two, Do you have any sort of theory about what this increase has been over this, especially the last year and a half, and for pedestrian strikes, really the last 3 to 4 months?
Yeah, that really great question. So, you know, our approach obviously is to care for the wounded, extricate the injured if it's in a vehicle with entrapment, and certainly provide care if a pedestrian or bicyclist is struck. You know, I wish I had the answer as to the why. I've noticed anecdotally the same thing, just listening to the radio every day and our calls, the number of major vehicle collisions, not your average fender benders that occur in a, you know, congested metropolitan area, but major vehicle accidents, high-speed collisions, and collisions with pedestrian and bike cyclists is markedly on the rise.
Do you have any sort of advice, especially for folks? Because what I've noticed is it seems to be at hours late at night or in the early mornings. Do you have any advice for motorists, pedestrians, folks that are out at those sort of hours?
Sure. Yeah. The number one thing is don't drive impaired, right? I mean, that's the key to a lot of these is there's impairment, but not always by the driver. Sometimes it's impairment on the part of the pedestrian or the cyclist. And so it's a two-way street, if you will, no pun intended there. The other thing is being visible. Making yourself visible as a pedestrian or a cyclist is critical. And, you know, I've just noticed driving around personally in Tucson, folks out at night with dark clothing, walking into intersections, it's risky. I mean, it's a gamble.
And not walking into intersections, but crossing
right,
in the middle of the street. And I agree with you. It is very dangerous to see someone crossing in the middle of a street. I'm thinking over on Alvernon, I've had a couple of experiences where I've had people just crossing the middle of the street in wearing dark clothes.
Right.
That is a recipe for disaster.
Yeah. Yep. It's certainly a risk.
You know, circling back, 645 of men and women with our fire service, does that include the emergency medical technicians known as EMTs?
Yes. So every firefighter in the city of Tucson is also trained at least to the level of an EMT. And then we have an additional layer of training for paramedics, a higher level of training. So some of our personnel are also paramedics here in the state of Arizona.
The recruitment of paramedics, I mean, we have such a shortage of people in just about every field right now. We have this, what they call the great resignation going on in America. I'm sure that translates into areas like EMTs.
Yeah, it's interesting. Over the years, we did a look back over the past 5 years of our recruitment numbers, just total numbers of applicants. And at one point, Tucson was up to, you know, 1,200, 1,300 applicants every time we would do a recruitment. And in recent years, in the past 3 to 5 years, it's dropped to that 800, 700 to 800 level. But it's not just here. I've talked to my colleagues across the country, and every fire department in the country is facing this reduction in the number of people even willing to apply for the position.
And that, of course, when you have that kind of competition, that means those departments that are more well-funded, cities and municipalities that are more well-funded, they have an advantage with what they can offer when it comes to compensation. You mentioned some of our competitors, El Paso, Albuquerque. My goodness, Albuquerque has a billboard, or they did a couple of weeks ago, a couple of blocks from the radio station here, advertising for Albuquerque police officers.
Right.
Saying, are you, come on over to Albuquerque, we can pay you more. How's the pay situation for Tucson Fire?
Great question. So Tucson Fire candidly went without compensation enhancements for many years. And one of the things we were able to do as a city leadership team working with mayor and council just last year was to give a significant market adjustment to our folks. It really put us on par, not so much with the other cities, because it's one thing to say, yeah, we're comparable to El Paso and Albuquerque in terms of service delivery and whatnot, but there are cost of living factors, right? So we compare, the city uses Arizona cities and departments for the market analysis comparison, and candidly and thankfully found that our firefighters and paramedics were being underpaid, so significant enhancements were put in place last May.
Is rural metro the immediate competitor when it comes to recruitment and pay in Pima County?
No. More so Northwest Fire District and Golder Ranch, both of whom their chiefs, the three of us, are very good friends. But yeah, Northwest and Golder would be the competitors. Rural Metro is sort of a unique animal because they're a private corporation offering subscription fire service.
So. Okay. All right. Here's Eddie Salaya from the Star.
So, Chief, I feel like all of my questions are going to be about increases, and kind of all of those increases are kind of bad right now. But I don't think they have anything to really do with the department. It's really about how the department is responding. And this question really has to do with really a tragic increase. Last July, I was at the scene of a triple homicide where firefighters were fired at. And I believe last month there was another incident, I believe in Northern California, where again, firefighters were fired at.
Yes.
Has there been a change in how your department approaches instances where there are hostile individuals on scene or where there's some question as to if this scene is secure?
Right. So the incident you mentioned from July 18th of last year was our real close brush with tragedy for us. And the event in San Jose where the captain was killed at a dumpster fire. Yeah, that's insane.
Wow.
So for us, you know, There's two ways to look at it. One is if we know we are going to an incident that involves a crime of violence, we will hold off and await police protection. We don't carry weapons. I don't advocate for firefighters ever doing that. I think it's way beyond the scope of our mission. That's one thing. So we will hold off and wait for PD to come and resolve the threat, and then we will do what we need to do. The instances we go to where the sudden eruption of violence takes place, you know, it's impossible to predict that. But one thing that the events of July 18th and from around the country have taught us is that it's just our folks need to be and are much more situationally aware of what's happening around them, and being mindful of the environment they're operating in and making sure that somebody has one eye on the scene as well as dealing with the patient or whatever the other problem may be.
It was unheard of, though. For years, you didn't hear about incidents where someone would attack a firefighter with a weapon. I mean, it's unheard of. And getting back to what Eddie was talking about this increase in the pedestrian accidents, there's this new anger. This is just the Bill Buckmaster theory, that anger is carrying over into all of these areas, the firefighters. And you mentioned that firefighters being armed. I was just curious, are there any departments that you know of where firefighters actually carry sidearms?
There is actually one that I'm aware of.
Where is
and
that?
It's Broward County, Florida, and that's because they are a public safety department, so their firefighters are also sworn sheriff's deputies and vice versa. So they operate a little bit differently. There are a couple of those models around, but in terms of, you know, firefighters walking into somebody's home with a sidearm, to me, that's just a bad visual. It's not what we're here for, and I don't advocate for it.
The incident in San Jose, I was not aware of this. You said it was at a dumpster fire?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. A captain in the San Jose Fire Department?
Yeah, it was a Bay Area. I believe it was San Jose, but they were responding to an outside fire, a dumpster fire behind a warehouse. Mm. And as I understand the facts, the owner of one of the businesses near the dumpster heard the commotion outside, thought he was being robbed, came outside with a gun and fired.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to pause right here and talk about some comfort food. Chief Ryan, all of us here at KVOI and at the Buckmaster Show love Mona's Danish Bakery. You enjoy a nice piece of a croissant or what they call a Danish kringle. You could go for that, couldn't you?
That and a nice hot cup of coffee? Yes.
There you go. And I know Eddie always has an appetite for something sweet, right?
Oh, most definitely.
Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. They're open right now for lunch, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise, a wide variety of European-style breads and pastries. Open at 6:30 for breakfast. They are open Tuesday through Saturday, and the website will very much tempt you with some beautiful color images of everything that's on the menu at Mona's. So stop by Mona's Danish Bakery, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. We'll continue with Chief Chuck Ryan, Tucson Fire Department, right after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org. The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. To prepare for ongoing project delivery, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to select projects for a new draft plan. The committee will help identify which projects to invest in to best meet regional transportation needs. Learn more about plan development and provide early input at rtanext.com.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, our Friday Focus interview. Tucson Fire Chief Chuck Ryan is with me. Eddie Celaya is here from the Arizona Daily Star. Chief, let's talk a little bit about the wildfire season. Unfortunately, this year has not been very productive. We're below average again this winter. We had a wonderful summer rainy season known as the monsoon, but who knows how it will go. That's always, you never know. So what is being done, the mitigation strategies to prepare for wildfires within the city of Tucson?
Yeah, so one of the things we've done is we've instituted or reinvigorated our wildland firefighting program. We've increased our capabilities with some additional equipment. We have 15-ish members of the department who are properly certified in wildland firefighting, engaging in a lot of public education efforts about the what's called the FireWise program to educate homeowners, business owners about the importance of keeping vegetation away from structures, how to basically fireproof a structure as best one can from wildfire or wildland urban interface fire. And just the buffle grass projects that we work through with partners there. So all of these things combined, the public education as well as the equipment enhancement and personnel is the key.
Are there special trucks and equipment trucks that are that specialize in the wildfire protocols?
Yeah. So yes, there are different sizes of vehicles. Four-wheel drive is obviously an important piece. Most of your city structural fire engines are not four-wheel drive vehicles. We need vehicles in order to deal with these sorts of events, the wildland events, that are more nimble than our larger apparatus. So we have some of those in the fleet, some what we call Type 6 fire department vehicles, wildland vehicles, which are basically a pickup style, like your Dodge Ram 4x4, that sort of thing, equipped with firefighting equipment. And then we have a Type 3 wildland engine, which is larger, carries more equipment, carries more water and hose, a little more heavy duty.
Were these funded through that initiative that the voters passed?
Yes, all through the Tucson Delivers Prop 101. That's where the monies came from to buy those.
So this has really helped your department, hasn't it?
Oh, absolutely, without question.
Here's Eddie Celaya from the Star.
Chief, I'm going back to those increases again. This one has to do with the increase in overdoses and overdose deaths, and unfortunately how those have increased since the pandemic has really started hitting. What is your department seeing out on the street, and do your personnel, do they carry Narcan?
Yeah. So what we are seeing is exactly what you described, Eddie, an increase in these types of calls, not just for the opioids, but to largely the opioids. There are also overdoses of other types. But yes, we do carry Narcan to administer. We have the nasal Narcan. Our paramedics can also give it through intramuscular as well. And so yeah, sadly, it is a problem for our community.
And with that increase, are you seeing that these are folks who are, like, you hear the stories of accidental fentanyl overdoses, and I don't know if these folks are getting heroin and accidentally there is fentanyl in it, or is it folks who are seeking out fentanyl?
I shouldn't say that. In my experience, I would not personally be seeking out fentanyl, knowing how risky and dangerous it is. I think it's more that, you know, somebody is out pursuing illegal narcotics and they get themselves some substances that are laced with fentanyl. And it's everything, right? It's sadly, it's people who are accidentally overdosing, and then you have habitual users who overdose with some regularity. We do see people time and again.
During the height of the pandemic, and this is the 2-year anniversary this week of when things really went south with COVID-19, I'm just wondering, there was such an increase in people calling for your EMTs to come out and service them because they couldn't get in to see a doctor. That really tied up a lot of services for the EMT service.
Yeah, it did. Thankfully, we're on the other side of that. And folks were scared, right?
Sure, they were.
And I understand that. We understand that. But we can't diagnose an illness, right? We can't. Mm-hmm. We don't carry COVID-19 test kits and whatnot. And so the best we could do under the circumstances during the height of these things was to connect people with a physician through telemedicine, you know, through a smartphone, so that they could talk to a physician one-on-one and get advice as to whether they really needed to come to the hospital, or if they could stay at home and care for themselves, or if they should go to an urgent care clinic, whatever. So we've gotten through that now, and that's thankfully that has stabilized.
Yeah, because people have called, and they do call, saying, I can't get into it, my primary care, can you send someone out? And that's not what the service is designed for.
Right. Yeah, it's not designed for it, nor do we have the capacity. So we have, just to give you an idea, we have 17 ALS ambulances, medic trucks, to cover a city of our size. our contracted partner for basic life support ambulance, AMR, super busy. They do our 911 basic life support response as well as interfacility transports and stuff. So there's the system capacity is just not there to do the sort of palliative care that to replace what a primary care physician would do.
Here's Eddie Salaya.
Chief, you know, in one of my past lives, I was a lifeguard and swim instructor, which is, you know, this is sure. that time of year for it.
Right.
And it's also that time of year for drownings. People are getting back into the pool. What is your department, what kind of educational sort of services is it offering? And what would you want people to know going into that time of year where it's just beautiful outside and they want to jump in the pool?
Yeah, number one thing is to know CPR. Learn CPR because CPR saves lives. Having adequate fencing, some sort of protection around your pool to keep kids or anybody out who's not, you don't want in there. And just, you know, having an overall awareness, again, it's that situational awareness of what's going on. And look, at my kids, I have two kids, and I remember when they were toddlers and how fast they could get away and get into something in the blink of an eye. And it's, you know, it's not an issue of neglect. It's just an issue of unawareness. So urging people to be aware, have the proper protections around their pools, and then please take a CPR class, get certified in CPR.
How is the Tucson Fire Department ranking? I know that your business, there are rankings. I mean, each department is ranked. And I just wonder, you know, how are you doing and how are your teammates doing with Tucson Fire?
I think, you know, yes, departments are ranked not like colleges, like U.S., you know, that sort of thing. But
what's the top 20?
We are, what, the 33rd largest city in the United States. So we are what's considered a metropolitan fire department. Mm-hmm. And that includes everything from your New York cities and Chicago's and major metroplex areas to some, you know, more moderately sized cities like Tucson. I think personally, and it's not just a personal pride for this department, I think we're doing outstanding stuff here. We get to do stuff here that some of the bigger fire departments can't do, even though they have more resources. You know, the bigger an entity is, the harder it is to make change and the harder it is to pivot when something happens. It's kind of like turning a battleship in a bathtub. Mm-hmm. And we're a little more like a destroyer. It takes a little time, but we have a little more nimbleness than a lot of large organizations do.
Is it an internationally accredited department?
Not yet, Bill. And that's something I really focus on and I want us to pursue is to become accredited through the Committee on Fire Accreditation International. If we can accomplish that, and it's an arduous process, and it really does, you really have to open yourself up to peer review, and it's a good review of best practices. But if we do that, we will be among a very small number of departments who are these metro departments, which means you have more than 350 firefighters serving more than 250,000 people who also have Class 1 ISO rating, which
the
is
ISO stands for
Insurance Services Office,
okay.
which is not as much about, it is based on fire protection, but it's also based on your water delivery systems, your public safety communications, things like that. To have a Class 1 ISO rating, which Tucson does have and enjoys and has since 2017, has a direct measurable monetary benefit to every business owner and homeowner in the city of Tucson, in the way of reduced hazard insurance premiums.
How about the infrastructure of the department? What is your footprint as far as department structures?
So we have 22 fire stations. We have 23 engine companies. Our main downtown station has two engine companies at it. But we have 22 fire stations, one of which is dedicated to the Raytheon facility at the airport plant through an agreement between the city and Raytheon. But that's our footprint, and we have about 170 people to 200 people on duty every day protecting the city.
Just trying to schedule that many people at that many facilities and trying to get, and I know the firefighters, the men and women work a 24-hour on shift, and then you were describing before we went on 24 on, then 24 off, and they get off a few days, but just trying to schedule those personnel, it must be a huge task.
Yeah, it's challenging. it can be challenging. We do use an automated scheduling software, but we have folks who get injured. We have folks who have babies. They go on leave. We have a fair number of folks who are in the military go on deployment. So we have a ton of overtime opportunities as well. And, you know, certainly we have our current vacancy rate, which we're trying to catch up with, as we've talked about in the past.
And the COVID situation is under control?
It is, yeah. January was a rough month for us, I'm not going to lie. Okay. That was tough, and probably our toughest month in this whole thing. But I know in the month of January, we had over 130 of our members become diagnosed COVID positive, which took them offline for a series of days. In the month of February, we're down in the low teens. So we are really thankfully on the downturn.
And you're very proud of the fact that most of your firefighters are vaccinated.
Yes, absolutely. Yep, very proud of that.
Here's Eddie Celaya. Eddie, you've probably got time for one more question from you.
Well, then this is the most important question. Chief, what is your favorite firefighting movie? And if you don't say Backdraft, I'm going to be a little disappointed here.
You know, I guess I would have to say Backdraft.
I know. It's a classic. You can't go from
it
a
is.
Classic.
You know, but I tell you, I've never watched, you know, the TV shows and the movie. They never portray reality, right? But I go back to, and this tells you a little bit about how old I am, right? But the old show Emergency, right, from the 70s, if you talk to many firefighters who are in their 40s and 50s, they're going to say what really got them interested was that show Emergency, because it really put the fire service on the map for the American public, especially the paramedicine piece of it.
And when you were growing up in Buffalo, New York, you hung out at the neighborhood fire station?
Albany. Albany, yeah. I grew up in the shadow of a fire station.
Your home was nearer than a fire station.
Yeah, just like a half a block away. I was that kid that was sort of pestering the firemen and, you know, can I help you wash the trucks and
whatnot?
Did
they let you help wash the trucks?
Oh, yeah. It was a different era.
Sure, yeah. Well, that's where it all started for Chief Chuck Ryan. Chief, thanks a lot. It's always good to catch up with you.
Bill, so great to see you again. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks very much. We'll continue the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios with our guest reporter, Eddie Celaya of the Arizona Daily Star, right after this.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at veroamorepizza.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Discover your world inside Biosphere 2. Explore living, breathing scientific research. Using the new Biosphere 2 Experience app, you can now explore one of the wonders of the world's amazing 30-year history and future through never-before-seen videos and photos. Visit today at info@biosphere2.org.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson. Tucson International Airport. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio, our live line when we have our telephonic interviews presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. And no telephonic stuff today. We've had the fire chief with us, Chuck Ryan. We thank Chief Ryan for coming in. He's always so articulate. Eddie Salaya is here from the Arizona Daily Star. Eddie covers breaking news. He also covers all the issues that are surrounding the legalization of marijuana. So he's kind of the marijuana beat reporter. Eddie, that's an area that you really presented to your bosses at the Star and said, you know, this is a huge business. I think we need somebody dedicated to covering it.
I really did, and I think that if you've been following the total sales as well as the tax revenue stories that I've been putting out, you'll kind of, I think it was kind of justified. This is a pretty large business here, $1.9 billion in legalizations first year. So.
And growing, $1.9 billion. I did not realize that part of the sales go to our community colleges.
They do, and those sales are tied directly to the tax revenue raised from the excise tax. So those are specifically dollars raised from recreational marijuana.
Pima Community College, I think, scored a nice 3-point-something million.
Yes.
Out of a windfall of over $31 million. So was this in the legislation that money, where the money would be earmarked to go?
It was. The Prop 207 really broke down in pretty good detail where those tax dollars raised from that 16% excise tax on all recreational sales, not medical sales, where that all goes. And the community colleges got a very good chunk out of it, and really a bigger chunk than what's been returned so far to both the city and county. So,
and I guess the community colleges then can use the marijuana tax money on pretty much anything they would like where they feel the need?
Yeah, theirs is a little bit less untethered.
Not as restricted.
Yeah, than some of the dollars that are wrapped up in going to law enforcement and going to counties and cities. The community colleges really kind of get to use this as much needed really revenue for them. So.
And then Pima County got some money. I think it was about $2.5 million. Is this the same sales tax revenue?
So this is actually two
different. It gets kind of confusing about where the money goes from the sales.
It does. About half of that is from the excise tax, and about half of that is from just the state sales tax that is on every purchase that's mm-hmm. made. So those are both medical purchases and recreational purchases.
Well, let's talk about this whole issue of expungement. There is an expungement clinic that you wrote about in today's Arizona Daily Star. Mm-hmm. What's going on? This clinic is scheduled for tomorrow.
Yes, and it's being put on by a coalition of groups that were really able to put these clinics on because, again, of those tax dollars raised through Prop 207. And that's what really sets this clinic apart. Folks who have low-level or small possession marijuana charges or possession charges, or in a lot of cases, sometimes even paraphernalia charges, those low-level cases, those are going to be eligible to be expunged. And that's what those clinics are really set up to do, is to reach those members of the public who I mean, it's you don't need a lawyer for this, but it definitely helps, and these are free of charge.
So there'll be attorneys there at these events?
Yes, there are attorneys there. And the other thing that kind of sets this one apart is they're also doing what are known as set-asides and civil rights restoration as well. Yeah, and that can also involve cannabis charges, but it can involve stuff as well as folks who got out of jail or got out of prison and might want to know if they're eligible to have their rights, like voting restored or being able to own a firearm. They can go to this clinic and kind of get some guidance about that as well.
The clinic is being held at a local brewery.
Crooked Tooth Brewery. Yeah, right there between 4th and 6th Ave. I actually enjoy it. They've got a great lineup of brews there. So if you feel like you want to go down there and support people too, or just have a brew, it'll be there, and it's from 3 to 6.
And so if the time period, what does this cover from when people may have this on their record? How far back?
So technically it should cover, I mean, all the way back to whenever they got their charge. This is retroactive for anybody
like
with less
than... back to the 60s?
Yeah. The one difficulty that comes in there, though, is that oftentimes the actual amount that people were arrested with was, like, the actual weight of wasn't made explicit in arrests at that time or in charges even sometimes at that time. So there are some cases of folks who have cases from 70s, 80s, even into the 90s that do find it difficult to have their cases expunged because they're not able to actually prove, like, hey, this was less than, you know, the allotted amount.
Is it a long process?
It's supposed to only take a month, but it's anecdotal evidence that it can take up to 3 months.
But think if you've had that on your record, perhaps for decades, it's got to be kind of a scarlet letter.
And
thinking about when people ask, well, do you have a record or anything like that? It would just be so liberating to have this expunged.
The folks that I've talked to that have gone through this process or that are in the process of going through this have just said that it is like removing the monkey from the back, getting an elephant off your shoulders. It's things that you wouldn't even think about, having to apply for an apartment, you know, having to apply for federal or state aid. A lot of times you're going to have to indicate on those forms that, yeah, this is on your record.
This coalition, I think it's called the Arizona Marijuana Expungement Coalition. Mm-hmm. It's a group of seven different organizations from around the state. They're all connected, I guess, to this cause,
yes.
Right?
Yeah, that's another thing that kind of sets this clinic apart from other clinics that have been done by Pima County, Maricopa County has done some, Normal has done other ones, is that this is exclusively for and funded by a grant that is for the next 3 years for them to do a clinic each month in the major areas of the state. So this is something that's not going to go away. This is a group that is specifically meant and focused on this specific issue.
How about the whole... let's leave expungement for a moment and talk about the whole licensing procedure. How is that changing? There are so many moving parts to this about who gets a license. Let me ask you, how many licenses to sell marijuana do you think there are in Arizona?
Currently active, there is, I believe, I don't want to say the exact amount.
Something?
It's over 150, but just over that. And
these are very lucrative, I would imagine.
Extremely lucrative.
Yeah, I mean, but how does a business, someone wants to get a license, how do they do it?
Well,
you have to buy it, or?
So the state, here in Arizona, the state awards these licenses. The last round of these licenses to be given out will be called the social equity licenses. There will be 26 of them given out. We're still waiting on the state to get back to us as to when that drawing is going to be, but there's about 1,500 applicants, and those 1,500 applicants usually are a consortium of folks who've put, you know, multiple bids together. these particular applications were only $5,000, but in the last few rounds have been anywhere from $15,000 to $25,000.
Wow.
just to get your application through the door.
Gee.
And once you get awarded these licenses, again, there's 26 of them, there's nothing preventing those folks who ostensibly are getting them because they are part of a populations that have been affected most by the war on drugs. Nothing is stopping these folks from just turning around and selling these on the open market for what could be between $15 and $25 million, or what people in the industry estimate.
Wow.
So,
and then they get their product from licensed vendors?
Yes. And that's a whole different set of,
the growers.
The growers. And once you get that license, there's a whole set of like, hey, you're going to have to be in contact with people to supply you with all of that.
Do they have to be in-state growers? Do they buy from Oregon, Washington?
Has to be in-state.
It has to be in-state. Can't buy from the Northern California marijuana growers.
No, not legally anyway.
Eureka County. Okay, Humboldt County.
The Golden Triangle.
There you go. Tom, are we out of time? We are out of time. Eddie Celaya, always a pleasure. Eddie, we'll look for your work in the Arizona Daily Star, and thanks for really some good questions. You always come up with great questions for our Friday Focus interview concerning the fire service with Chief Ryan. Eddie, I hope you have a great weekend.
Bill, thank you so much for having me on. Can't wait to be back.
All right. Weekend Watch is coming up with Matt Russell. Stay with us.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the DoubleTree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com. A Citizens Advisory Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is starting to review projects submitted by RTA member jurisdictions for consideration for the next RTA plan. The committee will consider plan goals and performance factors as they move into the selection process. The RTA will seek public feedback on the committee's draft plan when it is ready. Learn more about plan goals and sign up to stay informed at rtanext.com.
Hello, I'm Danette Bewley, CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority. At Tucson International Airport, we're nonstop supporting jobs and prosperity as an economic engine for our entire region. From an innovative and touchless passenger experience to earning the GBAC Star Accreditation, the golden standard for cleanliness, our team is ready to welcome you back to Tucson International Airport. Begin your journey with us. We're nonstop for you, Southern Arizona.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. Let's stir it up. It is Weekend Watch time with award-winning Tucson publicist, Inside Tucson Business, food and beverage columnist Matt Russell. And Matt, we'll get to you in a moment, but first I want to tell everybody that Matt's Weekend Watch is presented by our good friends over in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. I don't know about you, but great weather to get out and hike is temperatures in the 60s. Like, it's 62 right now over in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Great weekend for outdoor activity. Take the 3-hour drive, jump in the car, the truck, take off for a beautiful area of the Land of Enchantment. I always suggest first stop Southwest New Mexico, spelled out .org. There you will find everything you need to know about your wonderful upcoming visit to Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Let's welcome now the longtime host of Weekend Watch, Mr. Matt Russell. Matt, how was your week?
The week is going great, but this wind is blowing me into the weekend, so I'm grateful for the wind, actually.
Yeah, and you know, one of the wonderful things about Weekend Watch, you have introduced our listeners to so many wonderful openings of restaurants in our community.
Absolutely, and can you believe it, Bill? Another new restaurant has opened in Tucson, continuing to give me job security here on Weekend Watch, I can assure you. The new kid on the block is the latest concept from the El Charro family of restaurants, and I mean family literally. It's called The Monica, and it's named for the founder of El Charro herself, Monica Flynn. It's located at 40 East Congress. Now, the eatery will feature dishes from some of Tucson's most notable chefs and food personalities, offering a menu that changes depending on season and which of these family friends actually decide to drop by. This is a collaborative model that is definitely a first in Tucson. It's open for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. So try the Monica this weekend.
You like the menu offerings from what you have seen, Matt, at the Monica?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, every single time of the day, whether it be breakfast, brunch, lunch, dinner, everything in between, as I said, they're drawn from other chefs at other restaurants that are sort of Tucson celebrities, and to have that all under one roof is pretty extraordinary.
Everybody loves a great scoop of ice, a scoop or two of ice cream, don't they?
Here, here, yeah. The dog days of spring are here, and our friends at Hub Ice Cream downtown, they're offering special spring snacks and events all month long for Tucsonans, as well as their dogs. So dog-friendly treats, as well as promotional events like the Daily Doggo, which will get you $1 off ice cream just by bringing in your dog. And your dogs are going to love some things like Pupsicles and Bark Bars. And anyway, and also this Sunday, they're going to do Pup at the Park at Reed Park, where ice cream and dog-friendly treats are going to be available from Hub's vintage ice cream truck. This definitely has my dog's tail wagging, Bill.
Yeah, and yeah, this is perfect weather to visit our wonderful Tohono O'Chul.
Absolutely, and it's the annual Sundays in the Garden spring concert series. It continues Sunday at 1:30 at Tohono O'Chul, featuring the music of Tucson Guitar Quartet. Now, the concert is free with admission, and free for Garden members is one of their great membership benefits. You'll also enjoy plenty of beers and wines, prickly pear lemonade, even prickly pear margaritas, and you can even choose to kick things off over a delicious brunch at the Tohono O'Chul Bistro, which is located right there on site. Take my word for it. Go for the red chili chicken street tacos Sunday in the Garden this Sunday at Tohono O'Chul.
How about your Baltimore Orioles? What a tough time this is for you. No spring training.
Yeah, I mean, I can remember the pain from the mid-90s when we did this, and I think, oh, no, not again. But I have hope. I think the owners and the players can decide that it was all just a misunderstanding and play ball, at least in time for some of the spring.
Amen. Have a great weekend, Matt. Thanks.
Cheers, Bill.
All righty. The Buckmaster Show is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, which is wholly responsible for the content of our program. My thanks to Assistant Rosemary Brandt and everybody here at KVOI, including engineer and producer Tom Fairbanks, and, of course, the entire team at Bustos Media Tucson. All do such a great role in supporting our program. Stay safe, and best of all, have a great weekend, everybody.